this is the reality of running a timetable app, in that I loaded Reddit earlier to find out that GT World Challenge Asia has completely changed the timetable, because once again, we have not worked out that manhole covers need to be welded down for race cars. So they lost almost all of today's track running, which means qualifying, which was meant to be today, gets pushed into tomorrow, but there was a race tomorrow. And the race that is tomorrow then gets pushed into Sunday, but there was a race on Sunday too. So they've published the Saturday timetable. We're recording this on a Friday. And I currently don't have a Sunday timetable at all. And they've not updated the public website. All I've got is one badly compressed JPEG from Reddit. So that's the reality of running the racing line. I'm quite glad that like Evelyn and the dogs are away this weekend, so I've got no responsibilities, because it means I can keep up on top of timetables. Because, yeah, this.
And she can't hear you screaming.
Yeah, it's been a frustrating week, and then GT World Challenge forgot to weld the manhole covers down. They're in a Beijing street circuit. I've never seen this one before.
The rest of us are glad we have a Dave to tell us when stuff's starting, because then we don't have to go through all that.
Somebody on Reddit pointed out that it's not the first time we've had this. When DTM went to Shanghai for the street circuit, they had the same thing. This is a great video of a DTM car running over the manhole cover and basically exploding. It was about 2004, 2005 or something like that. So, yeah, not the first time.
Was it China where it happened in F1? Was it Haas?
Was there not a Montoya one or something like that? He ran over there in the early days in Shanghai, like in the actual F1 circuit.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
How come, Nick's not going to like that, I'm going to give credit here. How come Formula E work this out really easily? Formula E does street circuit after street circuit, and never have they had a problem where I go, oh, that manhole cover and it wasn't welded down. But then other series just have this problem constantly.
To put me on Nick's good side, I'll say that Formula E cars are too crap to pull the manhole covers up.
Yeah, okay, fair. Those look a lot faster because they're closer to the barrier, don't they?
First, we should talk about F1, because we've not recorded since Singapore, but I don't really want to touch the McLaren thing.
That's not what Lando Norris said.
It's been blown out of proportion by everybody, I think.
This would be several races in a row where we have went to talk about one an F1 race. It was a bit boring, which is, you know, whatever. That happens in F1. You get boring races. But the media reaction and the fan reaction has been more of a talking point than the race itself. Can you imagine if we had the internet in the Senna and Prost days? Can you imagine the state of it? Like, I know we had journalism back then, but can you imagine the kind of stuff that Autosport would have been writing if we had the internet and clickbait headlines or anything? It would have been unreadable.
Yeah, you'd have had Alan Prost photoshopped onto Maggie Thatcher's face and everything all over Twitter by now. It'd be.
You know, when we did have the internet, we had it during the Lewis and Max days. And somehow the media reaction is actually worse for Lando and Oscar than it is for Lewis and Max, despite it being basically a non-story now, whereas Lewis and Max was big story, proper rivalry, serious stuff is going on. It feels backwards. Like, are they just inventing stories now?
Lando's just more media kind of attached, isn't he? Lewis is always kind of, he wasn't kind of streaming on Twitch or being involved with YouTubers or anything like that, I think. So he kind of had that kind of separation from the media, whereas Lando's fully into the media and there's a lot more connection there.
I'm going to say something that's going to annoy both sets of fans. I think both drivers are a bit boring, to be honest.
Yeah, Josh Revel on YouTube did a video about how it's the most boring title challenge battle there's been because there is no aggression, there's no bite to it, and everyone is just kind of like, at each other.
I mean, I get that, but like, it's still interesting. But both drivers, I just don't think they've got massive personalities. Like, they're not bad people. Like, they're fine. They're nice enough people. But they're not that interesting. It's not the greatest crime in the world, you know, but maybe that's why we're just making up stories now. It's like we're determined to get them to hate each other because right now it's just a bit normal. That's the word.
I don't think there is any particular animosity, is there? I know there's been obviously radio comments, but they're radio comments. I think on the whole, kind of, it's been Zach's actually managed it pretty well in keeping them both on target with each other.
And compared to last year, where McLaren were determined to manage the situation to make it worse, which seemed to be their thing last year. I mean, I guess having this massive championship leads helping them a little bit, but yeah, wasn't that great a race, was it? It was fine.
I can't
George is probably a bit upset that nobody's actually talking about him winning a race. I had to think there who won. Nobody cares. Just the two McLarens made minor contact.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen since there's quite a few good overtakes. I can think of, was it Lance Stroll had a particularly good one around the outside of two cars, but we seem to spend more time watching the wives and girlfriends in the pit lane than the action on the track. And then the TV director managed to miss the entire last lap of Lewis driving with no brakes while we focused on the shot of some fireworks and a few fans cheering George's win.
There is somebody pointed out that Fernando Alonso overtook on track 10 cars and another one in the pit stops as well. And we see none of them.
No.
So Aston, by all accounts, had a, I wouldn't say a great race, but a good race and provided the most action. And we've seen none of it. Yeah, TV directing's not been the highlight of this year, has it?
Not even close.
With the, obviously, Lando and Oscar, has there been much talk about the Lewis incident with driving laps and laps with no brakes? I think that's actually quite a discussion point, to be honest, in terms of should he have been doing that at all? Should he have been allowed? Should he have been encouraged?
I think if Lance Stroll did that, the internet would have collectively lost its shit. I didn't think it was a big deal at first because I didn't see it. And the way that the penalty notice was written made it sound like it was he ran wide off a corner, not he just bolted right across the runoffs each time. You know, I feel like even the stewards' notice really underplayed the situation there because that car should have been parked. Isn't that a meatball flag? I mean, if it was Haas, they would meatball flag you if like anything like happens. But apparently no brakes is fine.
Apparently he did have brakes. It was just that they weren't very effective. yeah. So, and it's sort of, I do kind of get the fact that, you know what, it's the last lap. If you've got a car, you do drag it round to finish and take the penalty. If that was 5-10 laps from the end, I think it would have been a different matter. But last but one lap, last lap, I'm okay with a driver going for that, to be honest.
Well, if Lewis is going to finish a Grand Prix with three wheels, he may as well finish a Grand Prix with no brakes.
Exactly, yeah.
What else can you finish a race without?
I mean, if I was Lewis, I'd have done the same thing, but I would have also expected a slightly harsher penalty than what happened, I suppose. I don't know. It feels like it's weird that we're not talking about the overtakes. We're not talking about George winning, because a Mercedes win is notable nowadays. We're not talking about anything other than two McLarens made minor contact. That's just weird. I don't understand the media at the moment, because they're just as bad as the actual fans who are talking about it constantly on the internet. Like, Autosport is really bad for these things at the moment.
They really are.
Yeah, there's a point about Mercedes winning a race on a tight, twisty track in hot, humid conditions. It's the complete opposite of what they were doing at the start of the year.
I've kind of not kept up with who should be fastest when, because as we record this, it's Friday. So quota is happening. What's the expected result of quota? Are we going back to McLaren 1-2, or has the tide moved a little bit and people have reeled in the McLarens? What are we expecting for quota? Other than it's a sprint weekend, which I'm going to say something controversial, because I have the whole weekend to myself, I'm now in favour of sprint weekends because I can sit and watch both races. This is great. What sprint weekends?
There's a sound clip.
Yeah, the talk is about it being a Red Bull track, I think, or more that McLaren are downplaying their chances at it. Personally, I think Ferrari might be quite strong here, purely because we know they've struggled.
Well, as a lifelong Ferrari fan, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Their issue is they can't run the car as low to the ground as they want it because they're plank wear. But the bumps at Austin mean no one can run the car as close to the ground as they really like it. So does that maybe bring everybody down to Ferrari's level rather than Ferrari pushing them up to everybody else's? And does that give them a chance? I mean, we've seen Lewis has been strong in sprint weekends or sprint races at least all year. So, yeah, the eternal optimism of a lifelong Ferrari fan coming out there.
I think deep down, most of us are lifelong Ferrari fans, aren't we? Yeah, I'm on board with Sebastian Vettel on that. Everybody's actually a Ferrari fan.
Yeah.
Even when you're not. You are still a Ferrari fan. So I vote that we move off of the F1 topic because, honestly, it's not that interesting. And we talk about WEC and, more importantly, the fact that Porsche is leaving WEC, staying in IMSA, so the program's not completely dead, but the WEC one is. And this is a complex discussion, really, isn't it? This isn't as simple as, oh, they're pulling out of WEC because they're not happy. There's a whole discussion on the road cars, the Volkswagen group in general. Porsche is a sub-brand of the Volkswagen group, is problematic at the moment. This is a complex one, really, isn't it?
It really is. You've got to think they won the championship last season in WEC. Yeah. So they're only a year out of winning that, and they've made the decision to pull the plug effective next season. It is the third year of the program, which is apparently when Penske's contract initially ended anyway. I wouldn't say it was a surprise, but it wasn't expected. The first thing I'd like to ask you guys, though, is I saw it reported, people who follow F1 but not sports cars need to understand how big this is. This is akin to Ferrari pulling out of the Formula One World Championship.
No.
I disagree with that statement. I mean, for a start...
There's nobody at that scale.
Yeah, for a start, it's not even the first time Porsche pulled out of WEC.
The first time in the last, like, 5 years or so.
Exactly.
We have living memory of... at least, in the top of my head, three works Porsche programs in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And that's ones I can remember. Actually, if you include my lifetime, like, you can go back and you can go into the Group C one. So there's at least four works programs in my lifetime. So, no, it's not even close to Ferrari pulling out Formula One. It's probably closer to a major NASCAR team pulling out a NASCAR or a major IndyCar team pulling out an IndyCar, where it's important, but it doesn't completely upset the whole series. Is how I would look at it.
Yeah, personally, I think if we were sat here talking about Porsche pulling out of GT3, I think you could make that statement.
Yeah.
But out of top-class hypercar, like you say, yeah, it's at least the second time they've done it in WEC, third or fourth time in our living memories that they've pulled out of top-line sports car racing. They always
It's not even the biggest manufacturer withdrawal, as far as I'm concerned. I consider the Audi LMP1 program ending more important than what we're seeing now. And even that is not Ferrari leaving F1 level. That's probably the closest I can think of, is the Audi P1 ending. And maybe nowadays you can, if Toyota decided to leave, they've been here long enough that you're like, actually, they're committed to this. If they decided to leave, that's major as well. Porsche leaving, it's big because they're good, but it's only a three-year program. It's not like the Toyota-level program, or I'm trying to think of somebody else in there. Even, I hate to say this, Alpine.
Yeah.
Kind of in, kind of not. But they have actually been here a while now, you know?
Yeah.
So, no, that's a silly comparison, I think.
It is. Do you think the series will be worse off without them? Or do you think there's enough manufacturers coming in that it's, okay, bye-bye?
I think it'll be worse off. You got a sports car series that doesn't have Porsche. I think that's worse off. Whether or not that's going to dramatically change the series or not, probably not. It's probably not actually going to make any difference. But I think it would still be the better with the Porsche brand there. Just like it'd be better there with the Audi brand, if you had them still in. Toyota, Peugeot. I know we've got those two. But yeah, it'll be worse off, but I don't see it making a real difference to the series, to be honest. There's enough cars in it. And to be honest, you could lose another half the teams and it doesn't actually matter because you could just transplant LMP2 back in there.
Yeah.
The grid would feel big again. It'd be a slightly different dynamic. But as we saw in the LMP1 days, you only need two cars. Really, you need six cars to have a really good LMP1 race or hypercar race. So I don't think it actually makes any difference, and I don't think they should be worried about the numbers dropping, because LMP2 is a backup plan, and that's too healthy, if anything else. There's too many LMP2 teams spread across too many series. So you can transplant that back in. It'll be completely fine. WEC is barely going to notice, despite their what seems like a reaction by bringing in success ballast rather than just BOP. Maybe it's just bad timing, but it feels like a reaction to Porsche leaving that success ballast being brought in.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the pullout's very complex. One of the things that has been stated is that they weren't happy with the BOP process. And I think there's a general feeling around Porsche or Porsche-related people that a LMDH car would never be allowed to win Le Mans.
Now, was there not, I believe, through the course of the year, Porsche, Peugeot and Toyota have all made noises about not being happy with BOP, but you're not allowed to say that you're not happy with the BOP. But they've all made noises that is very, you don't even need to read between the lines, you just need to read the lines. Because Porsche pointed out that the selling point of BOP is that if you run the perfect race, you will win. And well, their argument is they ran the perfect race at Le Mans and Ferrari didn't, and Ferrari still won. So there was a BOP upset there, which I happen to agree with. So like that's them saying that they're not happy. That Peugeot have said something like they'll have to reevaluate their presence in the series if performance continues like that. Which again, we're talking about BOP. And Toyota have said something similar about, well, they've spent a lot of money on a car and it can't win and it's being held back. There's a little bit like, well, we know we've got the best car because it's partly not Toyota's fault, but it was developed a different regulation. So they know they've got the best car and they can't win with it. Well, that feels like BOP, and Toyota are pretty decent at executing races nowadays and they don't even get podiums most of the time. So there's three teams that have been very vocal about BOP. But I can't help but feel that the rest of the grid's probably going to feel a little bit like that as well. Like, there's a lot of teams actually doing very well and achieving nothing. Whilst Ferrari have made quite a lot of mistakes this year and are winning Le Mans and the championship. That doesn't feel quite right to me.
And I think, as you said there, Dave, about Toyota, and it's probably what's happened at Porsche behind the scenes, is they're talking about spending money, building a car, running a team. And as you say, they ran the perfect Le Mans and didn't win, so how else do you sell it? What else can you do as a manufacturer to justify a budget when you can do everything right and not win? There's just no point. And that's my kind of qualm with the BOP, is that it just seems like a lottery almost. Even the Fuji race was just so backwards to look at the results list compared to everything else that no one would have predicted it. So why bother getting emotionally involved? Why bother getting behind a team, even as a fan, but as a manufacturer, why bother putting in a budget when some people with a spreadsheet mess some numbers about and that's your race decided, effectively? And so I can completely see what, like I say, the main three complaints have been, but I can imagine behind the scenes a lot of teams are saying that as well. And the fact that there's a rule where they can't complain about BOP to the media kind of says it all about itself as well.
I think we do earn the right to say we told you so on this one, because we've been beating this drum for years in that BOP is a quick fix to get a lot of people in. Because if you're a manufacturer and they go, oh, you can get in cheap and you get the chance of winning, because you can build a cheap car for cheaper because it doesn't need to be incredible, and we will BOP it so it's the same and it's all about how you execute. That's the selling point and that sounds great. But then the reality hits a couple of years in, when it turns out that even if you execute, you can't win, because the BOP can never be perfect. There's no such thing as an absolutely perfectly balanced grid. That doesn't even work in spec series. Like, GB3 has got a bigger spread of field than F1 does, and F1's got 10 unique cars, and GB3's got one. But because the teams are all slightly different, and the cars have all had different histories, where they're all slightly bent and broken from various incidents that they've had over the year. So BOP is never perfect. So then when you don't win and you do execute, well, you just get bitter and you go, well, instead of saving money to build a car and be BOP'd faster, you feel like you're spending money to achieve absolutely nothing. So now you're getting into the sunk cost fallacy of, do we keep going because we've put money into it, or do you just bin it and go, well, this is a pointless marketing exercise now because we're not winning and we feel like we're not winning due to rules rather than our own ability. And that's always the end with BOP. That's what happens. BOP was essentially invented for amateur teams and customer teams, for GT3s and things like that, where you can balance them because you're balancing the cars, not the individual teams. And everybody's an amateur. So the cars just have to be kind of in the ballpark. And then it's fine because the driver spread is so massive that the drivers actually make much more of a difference. It doesn't work in professional motorsport. It's never worked in professional motorsport, and it always ends with teams leaving. And we've seen that in IMSA before, where it kind of collapsed, and then it came back with a new rules set, and teams have come in and out, and it's kind of stalled a little bit. And I think we're seeing the start of that with WEC. We're going to lose Porsche. I'm not confident that we're going to keep Peugeot. I do think Toyota will stick around. I think they're stubborn enough to stick around. But I wouldn't be surprised if Ford come in and after a couple of years they've not won, they go, oh, this is kind of not really what we bought into here. Especially if that kind of conspiracy theory of an LMDH car is not allowed to win Le Mans is true, then, well, nobody's winning apart from Ferrari or maybe Peugeot then, are they? Because it's not everything else, not just a...
Toyota.
Am I right?
Toyota, Peugeot, and Ferrari are hypercars, aren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, so and the Aston.
The Aston is. Because the Aston's the one hypercar running in IMSA, isn't it? So
yes.
And that's another one. It's like, how good is that car? Nobody knows. Like, I genuinely have no idea how good that car is. We know at the start of the year it was a bit ropey, but you know what? New car, limited budget. It's not got Toyota level of money or expertise behind it. Fine. And then at Petit Le Mans, at podium, and you're like, is it good? Or did it get BOP'd in? Did it get lucky yellow? Like, I have no idea how good that car is because BOP moves things around so much that I don't know where all the cars sit anymore.
The flip side of BOP, though, is do you think all these manufacturers would have signed up if BOP didn't exist?
That depends. Would they have signed up to LMP1 regs? No, because if they were going to, we would have had that. But what if you replace the BOP regs with, for example, a cost cap? And then you'd be like, actually, we're still limiting how much you can spend, but this genuinely is how good can you be with this money rather than do it cheaply and we'll make you as good, which is what BOP is. So like, would we have had that on a cost cap? Yeah, probably, because I think budget's the main thing there. And if you tell Ford, well, actually, there's a budget, you can't go over this, nobody else can go over this, and it's all about your ability, then I think Ford would still be there, or McLaren with United Autosports and things like that. So depends what the rules would have been without a BOP. Well, here's a follow-up question then. Do you think having success ballast is going to attract more manufacturers? Think about it from a manufacturer point of view. If I've spent a couple hundred million quid building a good car and then you add weight to it to make it worse and then I still win and you add more weight to it, I'm going to be like, what's the point in winning?
Depends on what you win.
And how does this, do we know the success ballast? Like, does it get removed for Le Mans? Or does the car that wins the first two races turn up at Le Mans with 50 kilos extra? Yeah.
So I feel like I should know the answer to this because as we discovered last year, GT3 is success ballast as well at WEC.
We discovered that because we should have just known that. But I felt like that was a discovery for everybody where everybody went, huh, there is success ballast.
Yeah.
But GT3 is different. And I know it's kind of half factory-ish in WEC, but there's AMs in it. So the success ballast doesn't play as big a role as when you've got like six professional drivers and two cars going head to head. The AMs really make a bigger difference there than 20, 30 kilos. So I don't know, man, if I was a manufacturer and you told me the rules were if you win, we slow you down, I'd be like, well, what's the point in doing that then? Like you're going to deliberately make me not win? That
again,
doesn't
though,
sound much fun.
It's a lot more transparent than the BOP process though.
Mm.
As a manufacturer, I know, okay, if I win, I'm going to get 10 kilos added to my weight. Whereas at the minute, it's like, oh, I finished third. Oh, okay, you're going to have 30 kilos added to your weight. We're going to take 6 litres of fuel off you and your turbo boost can't go above this bar after this speed. And it's like, well, there's no logic to that or I've not had the logic explained to me. Whereas success ballast, it is, you do this, you get this.
Are we getting both success ballast and BOP next year?
I don't see how you can't keep BOP, personally.
I mean, it's true, actually, isn't it? Because the way the cars are built, if you took away BOP, Toyota would dominate with Ferrari. To be honest, the Aston would probably be phenomenal, wouldn't it? Because the engine in the back of it's massive. It'd do 1 million mile an hour down the Mulsanne. Sand.
Yeah, under this rule set with the existing cars, I don't see how you could get rid of BOP.
And with... guaranteed the rule set for another 5 or 10 years or something, haven't we?
Yeah, it's 2030, I think it is, 2032 or something like that, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. So BOP and success ballast.
Which is what we have in GT3, to be fair. So
I don't see it working because another reason it works in GT3 is these cars are profit centres for the manufacturers. Porsche, Mercedes, etc. sell them at a profit to teams. The hypercars are custom builds. They're not being sold. Even the Porsches, I believe, are just rented out rather than actually sold on. So they're not profits, they're cost centers. I just don't see that working. I don't see that long-term working. I see that annoying manufacturers more than anything else.
So if there's BOP, so say you win a race, and then effectively you get bopped down, so you lose some power, lose some fuel, gain some weight, and then you put the success ballast on top, or does the BOP take the success ballast into account?
I don't think anybody's got the answer to that.
I think you BOP it and then your success ballast, because I am, again, here's one, is the success ballast by manufacturer or is it by car?
The success ballast has got to be by car, surely. Because surely if a Ferrari finishes first and second, the car that finished first gets more success ballast than the car that finished second. So that's not even by team. That has to be by individual car number, I think.
I'd hope so. This is the ACO.
Oh, yeah, fair.
Ferrari win and Alpine gain some weight.
But Matt, you said a really good, you said a really good thing there. That it's like the way that BOP's been working at the moment is you win and then they add weight, take away power. That's not what BOP should actually be, though. BOP is meant to actually just balance them. Right now, it is being used as a kind of semi-success ballast, isn't it? It's like you win and you get stuff taken away because you were too fast. And you're like, well, that just means the BOP was wrong. So we're adjusting the BOP, but everybody's gaming the BOP, but they should all be gaming the BOP at the same time. People who don't know what BOP is going to be sick of hearing of the BOP, aren't they?
Just... People who know what it is are sick of hearing it.
Yeah. It's just a mess.
It is. It's ridiculous.
It's a mess in a way that I don't think any other racing series could create a mess other than the ACO. Nothing can be this complicated.
F1 could.
Do you think?
F1's an interesting comparison because let's just take this season. If you think, realistically, you look at it, if you're going to bop the F1 field this season, you'd be dragging McLaren down a bit. But we already know McLaren doesn't work on tracks like Baku, Singapore. And so how would that now work? Would McLaren now get a bump for Austin because they've had a couple of bad results just because their car doesn't work at those specific tracks?
Well, was there not a theory that the way IMSA balances their series is they do it on car strengths at different tracks? So if the Cadillac's better at Watkins Glen, then it gets BOP down for Watkins Glen only, regardless of results, and then gets BOP'd up again afterwards or something.
Yeah.
I think that might be how IMSA does it. I think
they class the circuits, don't they, by different types.
But so here's another thing to chuck into the discussion then. The BOP is not wildly off in WEC because it's so incredibly close over 6 hours. Mm. How many cars did we have in the lead lap at Le Mans? Was it like 6 or 7?
It was like 9, wasn't it, last year?
Yeah. Mm. So we've never had that. So after 24 hours, you've got 9 cars on the lead lap. That is incredibly close, right? We can't argue that that's the closest Le Mans ever. Therefore, the BOP is close.
But is that also an issue?
It potentially is an issue because we had that issue with GTLM in the days where the cars were so finely balanced that once you lost time due to, for example, getting split up with safety cars, you could never make that time back because everybody did the exact same lap times because the standards were so high. We appear to be there with hypercar again. It's that thing of, is the BOP actually bad? It's like, well, probably not. It's incredibly close. So they've done the BOP well, but the standards are now so high that the tiny differences are now magnified.
Mm.
So the differences really need to come from the teams building better cars, and we're not allowed to do that because the BOP's in. Because in the Audi Peugeot days, the difference was actually quite big. But now, the difference is really small. You know what I mean? Like, I'm explaining that badly, but...
No, you're right, and it's a difference between... having a Jose Maria Lopez and a Kevin Estre in a car now. Yeah, Jose Maria Lopez's perfect race is still going to be slower than a Kevin Estre perfect race, even if we're in the same car. So, like I say, that those fine margins, they do get amplified at this level now, and especially over that long. I think me and Matt were sat trackside last year at Le Mans talking about it, and you say a big gap at Le Mans, you win by a lap. When you think about how far, that's 13 miles over 24 hours. So effectively, half a mile an hour faster. That's all you need to go to gain a lap at Le Mans. That is absolutely tiny. And that is extremely difficult to try and, you know, balance all these cars to within you're talking what, to be within half a lap, you're now looking at a quarter of a mile an hour per lap. It's ridiculously fine margins that they're aiming for in the first place. So yeah, I think there is something to that, Dave.
I think if you take it another step back and kind of go down another layer, why do we have BOP? Well, it's to attract manufacturers, to try and make it easier to compete. But Formula One doesn't have BOP. And why doesn't Formula One have BOP? Well, because manufacturers want to be in that because of the size of the series and the fan base around it. So why don't they want that for WEC? It's like, well, because it doesn't have the same fan base and it's not marketed as well. So is the problem here actually a marketing issue? Is it the series needs to do better highlighting how good the series is and how good the racing is and why you should watch it and making it easier to watch, rather than making manufacturers want to come in because it's should it be in theory easier? Should you not want them there because they want to be there because of the spectacle of it?
It's funny you talk about the marketing, because wet marketing seems to be lie about your attendance numbers and just try and take digs at F1.
45,000 every race. That's what it is. 45,000 every race.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of like boasting about how good it actually is fundamentally, because there is a great series there.
Part of it appears to be making the wrong decision at every point.
You've reminded me of Le Mans, Matt, when I put a picture in the group chat of when I was walking up the stairs and the big banner behind the grandstand. Bear in mind, this is at Le Mans 24. And the big banner they'd chosen for the side of the grandstand was, "Welcome to the fourth round of the WEC." And I'm thinking, you could not have underplayed this race more if you'd tried with that, could you?
Can you imagine the World Cup final being that?
Welcome to the eighth round.
Yeah, the eighth round of the World Tournament. Yeah. You know, let's really underplay that. But, like, do you not remember? Like, let's go back quite a while with WEC. Do you remember they did the fan engagement surveys? And they sent them out and they even posted the results. And then they did the exact opposite of what the results said, especially with circuits. So they did circuits. It's like, what's the most important circuits? Minus Le Mans. And it was Spa, Silverstone, Nürburgring. So what did we do? We dropped Silverstone in the Nürburgring. And you're like, cool. What finished last in that? Bahrain. Okay, we're going to add Qatar. And you're like, cool.
Don't know how Bahrain longer. There.
Yeah. And what did the fans want? The fans wanted Sebring. So we gave it a try. It didn't work once. So we went, or twice. I was like, oh, let's go to Kota. I was like, but fans didn't want that. It's like, you were doing something there. It didn't quite work. The execution wasn't great. Maybe you shouldn't bundle it in with IMSA. Maybe separate it out. Something like that. Try something else. Because this is what the fans want. And as soon as it didn't work, they chased the money with the big circuits. And same with the Middle East circuits. Like, I understand that they go there to finance things. But you also have to service the fans. Because if the fans don't watch it, the manufacturers won't want to be there. And then you come up with ridiculous ideas like BOP to try and get manufacturers in, and then you end up with this mess, where Porsche don't want to be involved anymore, and Lamborghini have already left, et cetera, et cetera. This feels like they sabotage their own series, and if it wasn't for the Le Mans 24 Hour, I don't think the ACO would have survived, I don't know, the 1950s at this point, because they just seem to just make the wrong decision at every point.
I think there is an element, obviously, as well of WEC is FIA as well, and the FIA aren't going to want to cannibalise F1 with another series, as we saw them do in the 90s. So you have to kind of understand them limitations as well.
To an extent, but you could put WEC around Donington Park, like, easily. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, like, you should.
First of all, yes, you should. But also, they would fit. They used to do that, and Donington's got a bit more runoff than it used to back in the day as well. So, like, it would work, and it's like, no, we're going to choose not to do that. And then they finally gave in and put an Elms race in Silverstone, and it appears to be their best attended race of the year. And you're like, oh, look, the fans were right all along, and you were just too stubborn to actually do it. And then you did it, and you went, oh, it works. And then you get weird quotes like, oh, it'd be stupid not to consider WEC at Silverstone. And you're like, yeah, we've been saying that for about a decade now. Like, this is what everybody wanted, and you said, no, we would rather go to Qatar. So, like, this just appears to be, like, it's almost like they're sabotaging it themselves. Imagine having the Le Mans 24 Hour and not being able to build out something from that. Like, imagine that. It's like, we have the biggest motor race of the year. We can't build something from it. That'd be like, IndyCar failing in the 90s when Tony George went away with the Indy 500. Like, the end result was always going to be IRL wins eventually.
Yeah.
Like, it was a slow game, but it won. And the ACO appeared to be not to be able to capitalize on the fact that they have the Le Mans 24 hour and they just can't do anything with it other than stick another couple of races around it and see what happens. I don't want to say we could run a bit of series better than this, but we could run a series better than this.
That F1 question, though, does interest me, Matt, because I think there's been a bit of a benefit to hypercar from the F1 cost cap. Because I don't think you have Ferrari in hypercar if F1 didn't have a cost cap right now.
Yeah. I don't think McLaren would be looking at it either.
Yeah, I don't think McLaren would be. I suspect, and I think a lot of people do, that Aston Martin was developed and that allowed Red Bull to do a lot of, you know, ground effect testing outside of the F1 cost cap, or Red Bull, I should say, at the time, because that's what it was. More of a case of a rising tide raises all ships here for me, that I think if WEC were to do better, then F1 were to do better, all the series would do better.
Well, we know that, but, you know, people that manage things don't.
I think part of this is, not only do the series not communicate between each other, they don't even like each other, it appears. It's like you can see that with calendars, like even on that level, where everything clashes and it's just hostile to drivers, teams, and fans. So you've got drivers trying to do double duty. They've got to do the Le Mans test day for set reasons, but they've also got to be at DTM's Anvor. And like, why is the test day on a set day then? What, it's a test day. It's not a race weekend. Put it on a Tuesday and nobody would care. It would be totally fine. But we're not going to do that because we're Le Mans. We're more important. But DTM can't move its race because it can only do Zandvoort on that weekend because they've got a whole bunch of other stuff. Like, there's no basic communication between them. As the 2026 calendars have been posted, some of them have had to adjust their calendars afterwards because they've made what they think their calendar is and presumably have got agreements with circuits. And then a series that's more important slides in and then goes, oh, no, we're having that date. And then you find, well, there's a cascade down of everybody's then got to change their dates. And you're like, I feel like a Slack channel would solve all this. Can you go out and just got a Microsoft Teams with an Excel spreadsheet? And like, we could solve this really easily, but they just don't want to speak to each other. So the idea of like ACO going, oh, we'll use a cost cap because F1 does it and that'll help us and then that'll help SRO and that'll help F1. They're just not interested. They're all in for their own benefit.
Sounds like they need an app as a middleman or something.
They don't even need that. They need a spreadsheet. I can make them a really nice Google sheet tonight if they want. All the circuits. You just put in the date that you want. It's fine. I'll add the circuit managers in so they can see who wants their circuit. It's fine. I could sort that in a day for them, but no, we're not going to bother with that.
Has a like WEC and F1 doubleheader ever been kind of considered?
No, but it should. That's a good idea.
They shared tracks, aren't they? So surely some way that could work.
It's funny you mention that because the Americans have worked that out because IndyCar and NASCAR are doing a doubleheader at Phoenix next year in February, I think. And you're like, that's just cool. Imagine being a fan and going along to that. That'd be amazing. So I'd be up for that. I don't think any series would want it, though. I don't think F1 would want that because it's kind of encroaching on the main event, and I don't think WEC would like to admit that it's on an F1 event, to be honest.
I was just thinking of the tracks you could do that at and what you'd want to do. Silverstone's the first obvious example to me, just because they've got two separate pit lanes that can host international. But you can fill Silverstone for F1 on its own. And as we've alluded to, it's probably, if it came back, it'd probably be one of the most attended WEC races as it is. So you're going to want to take it somewhere where you don't have a lot of fans showing up anyway to try and draw more through the gate. You need somewhere where they've got lots of land and money so they can build, you know, multiple pit lanes. And you just know that would end up at Qatar, effectively. Yeah.
Qatar has worked, to be fair, racing-wise.
My suggestion was actually going to be China, because the Chinese Grand Prix is not the most well-attended, despite the tickets either being free or as cheap as near as free. It's probably a market that WEC would like to be in, given its growing motorsport stance. The circuit's big enough. You could. Is there a second pit lane at Shanghai? Don't think there is there?
I don't think there is.
You could build one on the back straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's plenty of space in the back straight to build one, totally. So I would say China would probably be it. Or one of the new Saudi Arabian circuits, that mental thing that they're building for F1 can't even remember what it's called.
Yeah.
I imagine WEC would like that.
You mean WEC at Jeddah would be, yeah, seeing them hypercars around that video.
And if you think about it, WEC doesn't even want to do double headers with Elms, never mind F1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they have the perfect racing weekend there where you've got WEC, Elms, and Le Mans Cup. And if you time it right, you can maybe get Asian Le Mans Series. I think the problem you'd have there is teams trying to double dip into both would be a problem. Although it's not a problem in WEC and Elms anymore because P2s are gone. So you could do that. So I'd be up for WEC Elms doubleheader at Silverstone before.
Yeah, bring that back.
F1.
It just makes sense, yeah.
I used to love that weekend. It was brilliant.
And Le Mans Cup. You could fit all three series there quite easily because they had a single-seater series the last time I went. So definitely fit that in. The other thing I wanted to mention about the Porsche pullout is where does this leave the Asian Le Mans series? Because I feel like the customer car thing for hypercars was optimistic at best. And I was thinking that what you're going to end up with is maybe two Porsche hypercars in there. And now I don't think you're going to get any.
I had the same thoughts. And yes, Porsche are pulling out, but they are pulling out from factory backed motorsports. So there's nothing stopping Penske, if they wanted, continuing to run those under the Penske brand. And like you say, there's nothing stopping Proton or who else owns a Porsche? Somebody else who owns a Porsche, isn't there?
JDC Miller.
JDC, that's it. Yeah. So yeah, there's nothing stopping them do it if they want to, because like you say, they're continuing in IMSA, so the Porsche isn't going away from, you know, sports car racing as a whole. So it's still available out there. But yeah, I just don't see it happening. I'll be honest, I was skeptical even before this news because there are no other customer hypercars out there for anyone. So it's only ever going to be Porsche, and yeah, I just can't see it.
There is a yellow Ferrari.
No. You're a funny guy.
We know it's not factory, it's yellow.
But I mean, it's quite interesting. I can't remember what podcast I was listening to the other day. I think it might have been one with Ben Keating, but they were saying that the problem Porsche have for if they did want to go to the Asian Le Mans series is in China, Porsche is not seen as a sports car manufacturer. They're an SUV manufacturer.
SUV. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But isn't that because they're not marketed as sports cars over there? And you could solve that by having a sports car program. You know, how do you resolve that?
I mean, 911s have been racing everywhere forever. I think if you're going to resolve that, you're more likely to get it done with a 911 than a 963, I think.
Yeah, fair. What do we think Asian Le Mans series will end up with? Because my thoughts of what was going to happen was, well, I think what the ACO are thinking is that they will get hypercars into that because it will give a Le Mans entry and that's up for grabs. I don't think that's what's going to happen because the teams that would have a hypercar are going to be in WEC anyway and are therefore getting a Le Mans entry by default. So I don't think the Le Mans entry means anything. What I imagined was going to happen was Proton would take a Porsche over and Ferrari would take the AF Corsa yellow not factory car over and keep saying it's not factory. And that would kind of be it. And after a single year, it would be dead. And Van Wall's still not going to be allowed to enter for reasons that don't make legal sense, logical sense, or any other sense. Jim Glick sold his cars now, so he's not going to enter. So that's it. I think you were just going to get a Porsche, maybe two, and a single Ferrari. And then year two of that wouldn't happen, and that would be dead in the water.
And then comes a Dower 963.
Yeah, just put a different badge on it. But what are Cadillacs officially? Are they factory cars? Because the Cadillacs are weird in IMSA and in WEC. It's like they're kind of factory-ish, but kind of not. So do they count?
That's a very good question. Because the Jota's officially the factory, isn't it? So I think in IMSA, is it factory-affiliated, factory-supported, something like that?
So here's a motorsport's all about rules and working around them. So how do you define a factory entry? If that AF Corsa car is a really good example, that's a factory car. but it's legally not a factory car somehow. So that's entered. What's to stop Jota taking a Cadillac to Asian Le Mans series and going, no, we're not a factory this weekend? Yeah, it's the exact same car and it's the exact same team and there's Cadillac engineers embedded in it because you have to have that to run the hybrid systems there because they're so complicated. But we're not a factory team this week because we filled in the paperwork differently. Like, what defines a factory and what not? Because it appears to me you could actually transplant the entire WEC grid into Asian Le Mans if you wanted and just fill out the paperwork differently.
Don't like that question, Dave.
Like, I can't work out. Like,
yeah, it shouldn't be this difficult to just come up with an explanation for what constitutes a factory team. So in my mind, it's if the manufacturer are paying for it.
Yeah.
So if Jota rock up at, like you say, Asian Le Mans series and just say, oh no, Cadillac aren't paying for this, we're paying for this out of our own.
Yeah.
Mm.
But they are still the factory team, so they've got all the benefits of being a factory team just because the factory aren't paying for these 2, 3, 4 races. Does that change anything?
And I know the AF Corsa private car, that does have external funding, but there's no way it's 100% external funded. Like, AF Corsa are getting funding from Ferrari for that, or
it's got they're the getting same reduced sponsors cost. On it.
It does, exactly. And it's the same team. Imagine if Penske turned up with a Porsche that looked the same and they went, no, this one's not factory. But like, well, it's the same car. It's like, it's that argument again. But if you take that argument and just extrapolate it out, Peugeot could turn up there. And I can't remember who actually runs those cars.
Nor can they.
Yeah. I can't remember who runs those cars, but there is a team involved, maybe Graf, something like that. Somebody's involved in running those cars. Do you just turn up and put that name on the entry list and go, nah, we're not factory this week? Like, I don't have an answer for that, but that appears to be what it is it's purely a paperwork exercise.
It's just like the early noughties at Le Mans when Audi had rocked up with 4 cars, but there was only 2 Audi sport cars because the others were Audi North America.
Yeah, that's exactly that, isn't it? But in theory, this means the Asian Le Mans series grid could be the entire WEC series grid if you wanted. You just fill in the paperwork differently. Turn up with factory drivers, it's fine.
I think you've broken my brain a little bit with that for a Friday night, Dave.
Yeah, I didn't even think of it until now. It was when I was going through the thought process of what cars would you end up with Asian Le Mans. Like, well, in theory, all of them.
Is the Aston Martin a factory car?
That's a good point. Is the current Aston Martin a factory car? Because it's, I suppose, why wouldn't it be? Because I'm thinking it's Heart of Racing, but at the same time, the Ferrari is in AF Corsa. So is it just Heart of Racing running a factory for Aston Martin?
Guess but didn't is. Heart of Racing develop that car? They basically bought a Valkyrie off Aston Martin and developed it.
Oh, they did, didn't they? And how will it work with McLaren? Because United Autosports are not really McLaren.
I get how that both works run because by Zach. It's the same as how Audi with Yost and all that. They've contracted a team. But yeah, it's like, that's the point, isn't it? When does that contract not be in effect effectively?
Yeah. Like, this is all a paperwork exercise, which makes the Asian Le Mans system seem even weirder to me. Like, I don't understand why any team would do it other than an easy win. But you're really going to spend the money to go and drive around 4 races. I think it's 5 races this year. Or maybe 6. 3 events, I think. 6 races, I think. Something like that. They've got, like, the Sepang 4 hours. But there's actually 2 four-hour races. There's one on Saturday and one on Sunday. So there's actually 8 hours of racing in the Sepang 4 hours. Because that's how good the ACO's marketing is. Also, Malaysia is in the Asian Le Mans series, which is fine. But the Middle Eastern countries are also in the Asian Le Mans series, which raises geographical questions as well. This whole thing's a mess.
It is.
This episode was brought to you by the Racing Line app, your personal motorsport calendar. Don't miss a single race. With over 150 series and 600 events, the Racing Line provides start times in your time zone, live streaming, and customizable notifications to alert you to the events that are important to you. Motor racing is our thing. Don't miss out on any of it. Get the Racing Line app from the App Store today.